You are listening to Prometheus by Minute. I'm your host, Courtney Coulson. This is Minute 23. This minute opens with Vickers saying, "My company paid $1 trillion to find this place," and ends with David being salty and saying, "That's why they call it a thesis, Doctor." In a previous minute, Vickers ordered vodka, up. In bartending terms, up, or straight up, means any alcoholic drink shaken or stirred with ice, then served without ice in a stemmed glass. I mention this because we now see Vickers drinking out of something more like a whiskey glass. I don't understand this choice, especially when Elizabeth and Charlie are drinking out of more appropriate cocktail glasses. This makes no sense.
Waylon was a superstitious man. He wanted a true believer on board.
That line delivery always felt off to me. She sounds unnatural for some reason. Charlize is a great actress, so I don't think it's necessarily a bad line reading. Is she trying to make herself sound more artificial, perhaps? We cut to David, Holloway, and Shaw on the bridge. We see more of the greeting message to the engineers, which is a collage of imagery. This is likely meant to evoke the golden records on board the Voyager probes. They contain an assortment of sounds from Earth. That's actually their title, Sounds from Earth. They contain samples of speech, music, animal calls, and so on, but also photos and, for some reason, an hour-long recording of Andruian's brain activity. The content of the golden records are available to listen to through SoundCloud. I have been fascinated with the golden records since I was a child. I really hope they are discovered by aliens one day. How will they interpret what they see and hear? Will they even be able to see and hear? Will they be able to understand our message? We have absolutely no frame of reference for how to communicate with aliens, and presumably neither will they. It's one thing to try to communicate with people or even animals that come from the same planet. We have some commonalities, a similar way to perceive the world. A similar Umwelt, if you will. But who knows what life is like out there, on the other side of the galaxy. There is a feature on the Prometheus Blu-ray which is an extended message to the engineers. It includes brief interviews with the crew, basically introducing themselves as if they planned on meeting the engineers personally. They seemed so certain, but again, on what evidence? The featurette also contains an assortment of messages and videos of Earth. Always think about those actors who are only brought on for a tiny role that is unconnected to the main narrative. Like this little girl playing the violin. Her name is Louisa Staples, and this is evidently her only film role. She is, however, quite the accomplished violinist, playing since she was very young. She got into the Yehudi Menuhin School when she was 8, and has since performed around the world. Right now, she would be about 18, so she's pretty damn impressive. I've always loved the violin, if only I had more time to practice myself. There are sadly only so many hours in a day, and it's more important that I discuss every single minute of Prometheus. I'm curious to know what her experience was like with this movie. How did they approach her? Did she meet Ridley, or was it a second unit situation? Has she seen the film? Speaking of minor roles, we were originally supposed to see Shaw's mother in her dream. Her parts were filmed and everything. She's played by Ridley's wife, Giannina Fazio, which is weird because she's in her mid-60s. I mean, she looks fantastic, but probably too old to be Patrick Wilson's wife and definitely too old to be mother to Elizabeth. I'm not sure why she was cut out, but at least we know Ridley is above nepotism.
So no response.
I'm sorry, no.
Maybe they didn't understand it. How are your lessons going, David?
I spent 2 years deconstructing dozens of ancient languages to their roots. I'm confident I can communicate with them, provided your thesis is correct.
Provided it's correct, it's good.
That's why they call it a thesis, Doctor.
There's a lot going on in this shot, and yet it doesn't look busy at all. In the foreground, someone is pulling on a jacket. In the background, Milburn and Yannick look out the window. There's even a fair amount of lights and reflections and things, and yet it's framed in such a way that we perceive it as nothing more than negative space. Our eyes are drawn to our main players in the middle distance. David and Shaw sit on opposite consoles, looking down at their work, while Holloway sitting on Shaw's left, seemingly not doing much and sitting with a very casual, slouched posture. Elizabeth and David balance each other in the frame perfectly, where Charlie's presence ruins that symmetry. It should also be noted that the left side of the frame, the side David is on, is devoid of people. They're all on the right side of the frame. They oppose him. He's alone. Maybe I'm overthinking it, but there's a story being told here in the framing. Charlie's condescending attitude seems to be for his own amusement, but David throws it right back at him. Charlie doesn't seem to anticipate this. I don't think he's used to AI behaving like this. He is probably talking to David the same way he talks to any other AI. Question is he really a bad guy? He's a bit of a dude bro. He's a bit reckless, but he's never a jerk to any of the humans, really. It's just David. He seems to have trouble grasping that David is no ordinary AI. However, in a personal essay I wrote last year, I argued that people's attitudes towards machines can be indicative of their compassion in general. Quoting myself here, the majority of the crew are indifferent to David. Elizabeth Shaw is at the very least polite because she seems to be an empathetic person by nature. I don't think it's in her to be unnecessarily cruel. Her boyfriend Holloway, on the other hand, seems to delight in mocking and bullying David. He either assumes David is not sophisticated enough to pick up on his tone, or knows David is powerless to be anything but polite. The scenario is a demonstration of empathic concern. According to studies in human-robot interactions, people with high empathic concern struggle to destroy these little hexbug robots when instructed to by researchers. People with low empathic concern, on the other hand, didn't hesitate to pick up the hammer. What his behavior indicates is one of two things. One, he may just have a problem with robots specifically. Or two, he has low empathic concern. That he enjoys mistreating David because he knows he can get away with it. Does that mean he's a bad guy? Well, according to the Waking Up podcast with Sam Harris, specifically the episode Abusing Dolores, he and Paul Bloom discuss the implications of the behavior of the guests of Westworld. Essentially, how they treat androids will say more about us than how we treat our fellow man. Whether or not the androids can suffer is irrelevant. What it shows is that some people get a rush from assaulting or even raping these androids. It indicates that they have these dark desires. These are things they derive pleasure from. On the one hand, it's good that they are taking it out on machines and not real human beings. But on the other hand, it is a shocking display of their inner psychology, their shadow self, if you will. I would never in a million years abuse an android just for the fun of it. I could imagine if I was playing a campaign within Westworld, I would shoot the enemies and do all that sort of stuff, but the kind of things Logan or the Man in Black get up to? No way. It's sadistic, pure and simple. Now, Holloway's not nearly as bad by comparison. What he does is essentially microaggressions. He's big-dogging David, treating him like the slave he is. But what would he be like in Westworld? I don't think it's a big leap to imagine he would be right alongside Logan, raping and fucking his way across the park. Morally, this is a very grey area, and there are no resolute answers here. Alright, time to read another scene from the engineer's script. This scene is where the Magellan is setting down on LV-426. That is correct, not LV-223. Because originally this is supposed to be a more direct Alien prequel. But every time I see it in my notes, I'm questioning it going, wait, did I mean LV-223? 426? I don't know, I'm not good with numbers. Leaving the bridge, Holloway and Watts find themselves walking alongside David. Holloway, David, enjoy the show? David, I don't know that I enjoy things. It was informative. Holloway, it was. You know, I've seen more convincing humanoid robots. Watts smiles, watching Holloway's sport. David's speech never varies from its agreeable tone. My design's not intended to convince. Simulating humanity is a complex task that diverts resources. My design is dispensed with that burden to optimize for intelligence. Watts, why look like a man at all? Why not be a box on wheels? David, being shaped like you, I can use spaces and equipment designed for you. But I'm not so limited. I hear frequencies you can't hear. I see wavelengths of light invisible to you. I move faster, exert greater force. The scientists look at David and wonder, "What? You see yourself as a Superman?" David, "No." He turns his unearthly eyes on them. "Not a man at all." As we see, David was originally a blank slate. He didn't look very human, and his behavior was much more limited, making his final reveal make less sense. In the film, David is much more complicated and nuanced. He seems both trustworthy and untrustworthy at the same time. Up until now, he has been the perfect servant, and in this scene in the movie, he is demonstrating a playful edge, a level of self-awareness, but no red flags yet. You could imagine Alfred saying something similar to Bruce Wayne. I say self-awareness, but what does that mean to an AI? When it comes to consciousness in general, you have probably heard the words sentience and sapience. These terms are often used interchangeably, but they're quite different. Sentience is simply being aware of and responsive to stimulus. All animals are sentient. This is considered the most rudimentary form of consciousness. Sapience, on the other hand, is higher order reasoning. Wisdom, intelligence, the ability to think, especially being able to be introspective. It's, you could argue that they are part of the one spectrum rather than a binary. These terms are very important in discussions about animal rights, whether they can think and suffer as we do. But in the world of AI, these terms aren't all that relevant, because artificial intelligence is nothing like organic intelligence. We need to divorce ourselves from our anthropocentric perspective in order to truly understand AI, or at least as best as we can. Organic consciousness arose from evolution, from the fight for survival, the relationship between reward and suffering, between brain and body. Artificial intelligence arises from calculations. Simple as that. It's all ones and zeros. It is purpose-built intelligence, where ours is basically the product of chance and mistake and learning. AI can be broken down into a few different categories. There is weak and strong AI, and wide and narrow AI. I have an article in the footnotes that goes into greater depth on all the different variations, but to put it briefly, weak, narrow AI would be something like a calculator. It is the best, even superhuman, at one very specific task, running calculations. This is the most basic function for an AI. On the other end of the spectrum, you have strong, wide, or general AI, which is able to learn anything and adapt to any situation without being specifically programmed. Wide or general intelligence in this sense means that it is able to perform a variety of complex functions. You could have a normal conversation with it. Its intelligence is comparable to that of a human being. And finally, there is the theoretical artificial superintelligence, in which an AI surpasses their human counterparts in every conceivable way. We can very easily put David, Walter, and perhaps even Mother into this category. All that said, artificial intelligence does not equal artificial consciousness. An advanced AI would be able to pass a Turing test and fool you into believing it's truly alive and thinking. Hell, even strong, narrow AI, like the virtual assistants in your phone, can momentarily fool us into anthropomorphizing it. Happens to me all the time. I keep having this urge to tell my phone thank you when she's being helpful. I just did it again. It doesn't have a gender, it's just a female voice. Artificial consciousness would be something different altogether. At this stage, it is entirely theoretical. We don't really even understand consciousness in human beings. Consciousness is a subjective experience that seems to arise from experience. There is no one part of the brain that is you, that is the seat of consciousness. Dualism would argue that consciousness is an entirely non-physical thing. And here we kind of get back to the concept of a soul, discussed in minute 17. At this stage, it is an entirely philosophical debate as to what consciousness is and whether AI could ever become truly conscious. Maybe if an AI becomes advanced enough, consciousness will simply arise. We won't have to program it. Which wouldn't be good, because that means A, we don't have any control over it, and B, we'll be no closer to understanding what consciousness actually is. Is David conscious? I would argue that he definitely is. He has a rich inner life, which often runs counter to his exterior one. He values his personhood. He has emotions, and lots of them. And his motivations are not always purely logical. That said, I almost feel like he is beholden to determinism, as much as humans are. He has his programming, and then he has his personality on top of that. Sometimes he thinks he is doing things simply because he wants to, but perhaps his programming is informing that behavior in some subconscious way. Walter, on the other hand, well, we'll delve into his consciousness next year when we get to Covenant, but I will just say, I find him a far more compelling case study for artificial consciousness. Walter seems closer to a real AI. He sits in a far less certain place than David does. David is undeniably alive, but Walter, it's less clear. Alright, that about covers it. This is Coulson, signing off. You can find me on traviandesigns.com, TRAVIAN, or Prometheus by Minute on Facebook. And again, leave a review on iTunes or Facebook if you like. Share the podcast around. Thank you very much.